Juliet began her long walk down through the length of the silo. It would be less physically taxing than her walk up had been, but more draining in other ways. What exactly had happened to the silo, and why? She couldn't help but feel in the middle of it all, to shoulder some of the blame. None of this would have happened had they left her in Mechanical, had they never come to see her in the first place. She would still be bitching about the alignment of the generator, not sleeping at night as she waited for the inevitable failure and a descent into chaos as they learned to survive on backup power for the decades it would take to rebuild the thing. Instead, she had been witness to a different type of failure, a throwing not of rods but of bodies. She felt most horrible for Scotty, a boy with so much promise, so many talents, taken before his prime. She had been sheriff for a short time, a star appearing on her breast for but a wink, and yet she felt an incredible urge to investigate. There was something not right about Scotty killing himself. The signs were there, sure. He had been afraid to leave his office, but then he'd also shadowed under Walker and had maybe picked up the habit of reclusiveness from the old man. Scotty had also been harboring secrets too big for his young mind, had been fearful enough to wire her to come quickly. But she knew the boy like her own shadow, and knew he didn't have it in him. She suddenly wondered if Marnes had ever had it in him as well. If Jeans were here, beside her, would the old mayor be screaming for Jules to investigate both their deaths, telling her that none of this fit? "I can't," Juliet whispered to the ghost, causing an upbound porter to turn his head as he passed. She kept further thoughts to herself. As she descended toward her father's nursery, she paused at the landing, contemplating longer and harder about going in to see him than she had on her way up. Pride had prevented her the first time, and now shame set her feet into motion once again, spiraling down away from him, chastising herself for thinking on the ghosts from her past that had long ago been banished from memory. At the 34th, the entrance to IT, she again considered stopping. There would be clues in Scotty's office, maybe even some they hadn't managed to scrub away. She shook her head. The conspiracies were already forming in her mind, and as hard as it was to leave the scene of the crime behind, she knew she wouldn't be allowed anywhere near his office. She continued down the staircase and thought, as she considered IT's location in the silo, that this couldn't be an accident either. She had another 32 floors to go before she checked in with the first deputy, who was located near the center of the mids. The sheriff's office was 33 floors above her head. IT, then, was as far as it could get from any deputy station in the silo. She shook her head at this paranoid thinking. It wasn't how diagnoses were made. Her father would have told her so. After meeting with the first deputy around noon and accepting a piece of bread and fruit along with a reminder to eat, she made good time down through the mids, wondering as she passed the upper apartments which level Lucas lived on, or if he even knew of her arrest. The weight of the past week seemed to pull her down the stairwell, gravity sucking at her boots, the pressures of being sheriff dissipating as she left that office far behind. Those pressures were slowly replaced with an eagerness to return to her friends, even in shame, as she got closer and closer to Mechanical. She stopped to see Hank, the down-deep deputy on level 120. She had known him for a long time, was becoming more and more surrounded with familiar faces, people who waved hello, their moods somber as if they knew every detail of her time away. Hank tried to get her to stay and rest a while, but she only paused long enough to be polite, to refill her canteen, and then to shuffle the remaining 20 floors to the place she truly belonged. Knox seemed thrilled to have her back. He wrapped her up in a crippling hug, lifting her feet off the ground and roughing up her face with his beard. He smelled of grease and sweat, a mix Juliet had never fully noticed in the down deep because she had never been free from it. The walk to her old room was punctuated by slaps on her back, Well wishes, questions about the up top, people calling her sheriff in jest, and the sort of rude frivolity she had grown up in and grown used to. Juliet felt more saddened by it all than anything. She had set out to do something and had failed. And yet her friends were just happy to have her back. Shirley, from second shift, spotted her coming down the hallway and accompanied Juliet on the rest of the walk to her room. She updated Juliet on the status of the generator and the output from the new oil well, as if Juliet had simply been on vacation for a short while. Juliet thanked her at the door to her room, stepped inside, and kicked her way through all the folded notes slipped under her door. She lifted the strap of her day pack over her head and dropped it, then collapsed onto her bed, too exhausted and upset at herself to even cry. She awoke in the middle of the night. Her small display terminal showed the time in green blocky numbers, 2:14 a.m. Juliet sat on the edge of her old bed in coveralls that weren't truly hers and took stock of her situation. Her life was not yet over, she decided. It just felt that way. Tomorrow, even if they didn't expect her to, she would be back at work in the pits, keeping the silo humming, doing what she did best. She needed to wake up to this reality, to set other ideas and responsibilities aside. Already they felt so far away. She doubted she would even go to Scotty's funeral, not unless they sent his body down to be buried where it belonged. She reached for the keyboard slotted into the wall rack. Everything was covered in a layer of grime, she saw. She had never noticed it before. The keys were filthy from the dirt she brought back from each shift. The monitor's glass was limned with grease. She fought the urge to wipe the screen and smear the shiny coat of oil around, but she would have to clean her place a little deeper, she decided. She was viewing things with untainted and more critical eyes. Rather than chase pointless sleep, she keyed the monitor awake to check the work logs for the next day, anything to get her mind off the past week. But before she could open her task manager, she saw that she had over a dozen wires in her inbox. She'd never seen so many. Usually people just slid recycled notes under each other's doors. But then she had been a long way away when the news of her arrest had hit, and she hadn't been able to get to a computer since. She logged onto her email account and pulled up the most recent wire. It was from Knox. Just a semicolon and a parenthesis. A half-chit smile. Juliet couldn't help it. She smiled back. She could still smell Knox on her skin and realized, as far as the big brute was concerned, that all the troubles and problems percolating in whispers down the stairwell about her paled in comparison to her return. To him, the worst thing that had happened in the last week was probably the challenge of replacing her on first shift. Jules went to the next message, one from the third shift foreman welcoming her home. Probably because of the extra time his crew was putting in to help cover her old shift. There was more. A day's pay of a note from Shirley, wishing her well on her journey. These were all notes they had hoped she would receive up top to make the trip down easier, hoping she wouldn't loathe herself and would know she shouldn't feel humiliated or even a failure. Juliet felt tears well up at how considerate it all was. She had an image of her desk, Holston's desk, with nothing but unplugged wires snaking across its surface, her computer removed. There was no way she could have gotten these messages when they were meant to be read. She wiped at her eyes and tried not to think of the wired notes as money wasted, but rather as extravagant tokens of her friendships in the down deep. Reading each one, trying to hold it together, made the last message she came to doubly jarring. It was paragraphs long. Juliet assumed it was an official document, maybe a list of her offenses, a formal ruling against her. She had only seen such messages from the mayor's office, usually on holidays, notes that went out to every silo member. But then she saw that it was from Scotty. Juliet sat straight up and tried to clear her head. She started from the beginning, damning her blurred vision. Jay, I lied. I couldn't delete this stuff. Found more. That tape I got you? Your joke was truth. And the program, not for a big screen. PXL density, not right. 32,768 by 8,192. Not sure what's that size. 8 inches by 2 inches? So many PXLs, if so. Putting more together. Don't trust Porter, so wiring this. Screw cost. Wire me back. Need transfer to mech. Not safe here. S. Juliet read it a second time, crying now. Here was the real voice of a ghost warning her of something, all of it too late. And it wasn't the voice of one who was planning his death. She was sure of that. She checked the timestamp of the wire. It was sent before she had even arrived back at her office the day before, before Scotty had died. Before he had been killed, she corrected herself. They must have found him snooping, or maybe her visit had alerted them. She wondered what IT could see, if they could break into her wire account even. They must not have yet, or the message wouldn't be there, waiting for her. She leapt suddenly from her bed and grabbed one of the folded notes by the door. Digging a charcoal from her day pack, she sat back down on the bed. She copied the entire wire, every odd spelling, double-checking each number, and then deleted the message. She had chills up and down her arms by the time she finished, as if some unseen person was racing toward her, hoping to break into her computer before she dispensed with the evidence. She wondered if Scotty had been cautious enough to have deleted the note from his scent wires and assumed, if he'd been thinking clearly, that he would. She sat back on her bed, holding the copied note, thoughts about the work log for the next day gone. Instead, she studied the sinister mess revolving around her, spiraling through the heart of the silo. Things were bad, from top to bottom. A great set of gears had been thrown out of alignment. She could hear the noise from the past week, this thumping and clanging, this machine lumbering off its mounts and leaving bodies in its wake. And Juliet was the only one who could hear it. She was the only one who knew. And she didn't know whom she could trust to help set things right, but she did know this. It would require a diminishing of power to align things once again. And there would be no way to call what happened next a holiday.
You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Wool, Omnibus Edition, Wool 1 through 5, written by Hugh Howey, narrated by Minnie Good. 10. Juliet showed up at Walker's electronics workshop at 5, worried she might find him asleep on his cot, but smelling instead the distinctive odor of vaporized solder wafting down the hallway. She knocked on the open door as she entered, and Walker looked up from one of his many green electronics boards, corkscrews of smoke rising from the tip of his soldering iron.
"Jules!" he shouted.
He lifted the magnifying lens off his gray head and set it and the soldering iron down on the steel workbench.
"I heard you were back. I meant to send a note, but..."
He waved around at the piles of parts with their work order tags dangling from strings.
"Super busy," he explained.
"Oh, forget it," she said. She gave Walker a hug, smelling the electrical fire scent on his skin that reminded her so much of him and of Scotty. "I'm going to feel guilty enough taking some of your time with this," she said.
"Oh?"
He stepped back and studied her, his bushy white brows and wrinkled skin furrowed with worry.
"You got something for me?"
He looked her up and down for a broken thing, a habit formed from a lifetime of being brought small devices that needed repairing. "I actually just wanted to pick your brain." She sat down on one of his workbench stools, and Walker did the same.
"Go ahead," he said.
He wiped his brow with the back of his sleeve, and Juliet saw how old Walker had become. She remembered him without so much white in his hair, without the wrinkles and splotchy skin. She remembered him with his shadow. "It has to do with Scotty," she warned him. Walker turned his head to the side and nodded. He tried to say something, tapped his fist against his chest a few times, and cleared his throat.
"Damn shame,"
was all he could manage. He peered down at the floor for a moment. It can wait, Juliet told him, if you need time.
I convinced him to take that job,
Walker said, shaking his head.
I remember when the offer came, being scared he'd turn it down because of me, you know, that he'd be too afraid of me being upset at him for leaving, that he might just stay forever, so I urged him to take it.
He looked up at her, his eyes shining.
I just wanted him to know he was free to choose. I didn't mean to push him away.
You didn't, Juliet said. Nobody thinks that, and neither should you.
I just don't figure he was happy up there. That weren't his home.
Well, he was too smart for us. Don't forget that. We always said that.
He loved you,
Walker said, and wiped his eyes.
Damn, how that boy looked up to you.
Juliet felt her own tears welling up again. She reached into her pocket and brought out the wire she'd transcribed onto the back of the note. She had to remind herself why she was there, to hold it together.
It just don't seem like him to take the easy way,
Walker muttered. No, it doesn't, she said. Walker, I need to discuss some things with you that can't leave this room. He laughed, mostly, it seemed, to keep from sobbing.
Like I ever leave this room, he said.
Well, it can't be discussed with anyone else. No one, okay? He bobbed his head. I don't think Scotty killed himself. Walker threw up his hands to cover his face. He bent forward and shook as he started to cry. Juliet got off her stool and went to him, put her arms around his trembling back.
I knew it.
He sobbed into his palms.
I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
He looked up at her, tears coursing through several days of white stubble.
Who did this? They'll pay, won't they? Tell me who did it, Jules.
Whoever it was, I don't think they had far to travel, she said.
IT? God damn them!
Walker, I need your help sorting this out. Scotty sent me a wire not long before he... Well, before I think he was killed.
Sent you a wire?
Yeah. Look, I met with him earlier that day. He asked me to come down to see him.
Down to IT?
She nodded. I'd found something in the last sheriff's computer.
Austin.
He dipped his head.
The last cleaner. Yeah, Knox brought me something from you, a program, looked like. I told him Scotty would know better than anyone, so we forwarded it along.
Well, you were right. Walker wiped his cheeks and bobbed his head.
He was smarter than any of us.
I know. He told me this thing, that it was a program, one that made very detailed images, like the images we see of the outside. She waited a beat to see how he would respond. It was taboo to even use the word in most settings. Walker was unmoved. As she had hoped, he was old enough to be beyond childhood fears, and probably lonely and sad enough not to have cared anyway. But this wire he sent, it says something about PXLs being too dense? She showed him the copy she'd made. Walker grabbed his magnifiers and slipped the band over his forehead.
Pixels,
he said, sniffing.
He's talking about the little dots that make up an image. Each one is a pixel.
He took the note from her and read some more.
He says it's not safe there.
Walker rubbed his chin and shook his head.
Damn them!
Walker, what kind of screen would be 8 inches by 2 inches? Juliet looked around at all the boards, displays, and coils of loose wire strewn about his workshop. Do you have anything like that?
8 by 2? Maybe a readout, like on the front of a server or something. Be the right size to show a few lines of text, internal temps, clock cycles.
He shook his head.
But you'd never make one with this kind of pixel density. Even if it were possible, it would make sense. Your eye couldn't make out one pixel from its neighbor if it were right at the end of your nose.
He rubbed his stubble and studied the note some more.
What's this nonsense about the tape and the joke? What's that mean?
Juliet stood beside him and looked over the note. I've been wondering about that. He must mean the heat tape he scored for me a while back.
I think I remember something about that.
Well, do you remember the problems we had with it? The exhaust we wrapped in it almost caught fire. The stuff was complete crap. I think he sent a note asking if the tape had gotten here okay, and I sort of recall writing back that it did, and thanks, but the tape couldn't have self-destructed better if it had been engineered to.
That was a joke?
Walker swiveled in his stool and rested his elbows on the workbench. He kept peering over the copied charcoal letters like they were the face of Scotty, his little shadow coming back one last time to tell him something important.
And he says my joke was truth, Juliet said. I've been up the last 3 hours thinking about this, dying to talk to someone.
Walker looked back over his shoulder at her, his eyebrows raised. I'm not a sheriff, Walk. Never born to be one. Shouldn't have gone. But I know, as sure as everyone, that what I'm about to say should set me to cleaning. Walker immediately slid off his stool and walked away from her. Juliet damned herself for coming, for opening her mouth, for not just clocking into first shift and saying to hell with it all. Walker shut the door to his workshop and locked it. He looked at her and lifted a finger, went to his air compressor and pulled out a hose. Then he flipped the unit on so the motor would start to build up pressure, which just leaked out the open nozzle in a steady, noisy hiss. He returned to the bench, the clatter from the noisy compressor engine awful, and sat down. His wide eyes begged her to continue. "There's a hill up there with a crook in it," she told him, having to raise her voice a little. "I don't know how long it's been since you've seen this hill, but there are two bodies nestled together in it, man and wife. If you look hard, you can see a dozen shapes like this all over the landscape. All the cleaners, all in various states of decay. Most are gone, of course, rotted to dust over the long years." Walker shook his head at the image she was forming. "How many years have they been improving these suits so the cleaners have a chance? Hundreds?" He nodded. "And yet nobody gets any further. And never once have they not had enough time to clean." Walker looked up and met her gaze.
"Your joke is truth,"
he said.
"The heat tape, it's engineered to fail."
Juliet pursed her lips. "That's what I'm thinking. But not just the tape. Remember those seals from a few years back? The ones from IT that went into the water pumps that were delivered to us by accident?"
"So we've been making fun of IT for being fools and dullards."
"But we're the fools," Juliet said, and it felt so damned good to say it to another human being. So good for these new ideas of hers to swim in the air. And she knew she was right about the cost of sending wires, that they didn't want people talking. Thinking was fine. They would bury you with your thoughts. But no collaboration, no groups coordinating together, no exchange of ideas. "You think they have us down here to be near the oil?" she asked Walker. "I don't think so. Not anymore. I think they're keeping anyone with a lick of mechanical sense as far from them as possible. There's two supply chains, two sets of parts being made, all in complete secrecy. And who questions them? Who would risk being put to cleaning?"
"You think they killed Scotty?"
he asked. Juliet nodded. "Walk, I think it's worse than that." She leaned closer, the compressor rattling, the hiss of released air filling the room. "I think they kill everybody." 11. Juliet reported to first shift at 6, the conversation with Walker playing over and over in her head. There was a sustained and embarrassing applause from the handful of techs present as she entered dispatch. Knox just glared at her from the corner, back to his gruff demeanor. He had already welcomed her back, and damned if he'd do it again. She said hello to the people she hadn't seen the night before and looked over the job queue. The words on the board made sense, but she had a difficult time processing them. In the back of her mind, she thought about poor Scotty, confused and struggling while someone killed him. She thought of his little body, probably riddled with evidence, but soon to feed the roots of the dirt farms. She thought of a married couple lying together on a hill, never given a chance to make it any further, to see beyond the horizon. She chose a job from the queue, one that would require little mental exertion on her part, and thought of poor Jean's and Marne's, how tragic their love, if she had been reading Marne's correctly, had been. The temptation to tell the entire room was crippling. She looked around at Megan and Ricks, at Jenkins and Mark, and thought about the small army of tight brotherhood she could form. The silo was rotten to the core. An evil man was acting mayor. A puppet stood where a good sheriff had been, and all the good men and women were gone. It was comical to imagine her rallying a band of mechanics to storm the upper levels and right a wrong. And then what? Was this the uprising they had learned about as children? Is this how it begins? One silly woman with fire in her blood stirring the hearts of a legion of fools? She kept her mouth shut and made her way to the pump room, riding the flow of morning mechanics, thinking more about what she should be doing above than on what needed repairing below. She descended one of the side stairwells, stopped by the tool room to check out a kit bag, and lugged the heavy satchel to one of the deep pits where pumps ran constantly to keep the deep silo from filling halfway up with water. Carol, a transfer from third shift, was already working near the pit basin, patching rotten cement. She waved with her trowel, and Juliet dipped her chin and forced herself to smile. The offending pump sat idle on one wall, the backup pump beside it struggling mightily and spraying water out of dry and cracked seals. Juliet looked into the basin to gauge the height of the water. A painted number 9 was just visible above its murky surface. Juliet did some quick math, knowing the diameter of the basin and it being almost 9 feet full. The good news was that they had at least a day before boots were getting wet. Worst case, they replace the pump with a rebuilt one from spares and deal with Hendricks bitching at them for checking it out instead of fixing what they already had. As she began stripping the failed pump down, pelted with spray from its smaller, leaking neighbor, Juliet considered her life with this new perspective provided by the morning's revelations. The silo was something she had always taken for granted. The priests say it had always been here, that it was lovingly created by a caring God, that everything they would ever need had been provided for. Juliet had a hard time with this story. A few years ago, she had been on the first team to drill past 10,000 feet and hit new oil reserves. She had a sense of the size and scope of the world below them, and then she had seen with her own eyes the view of the outside, with its phantom-like sheets of smoke they called clouds, rolling by on miraculous heights. She had even seen a star, which Lucas thought stood an inconceivable distance away. What god would make so much rock below and air above and just a measly silo between? And then there was the rotting skyline and the images in the children's books, both of which seemed to hold clues. The priests, of course, would say that the skyline was evidence that man wasn't supposed to exceed his bounds. And the books with the faded color pages? The fanciful imagination of authors, a class done away with for all the trouble they inspired.